Pittsburgh Steelers fans, it is time once again for another edition of the Know Your Enemy podcast. My name is Michael Beck, your deputy editor behind steelcurtain.com. I'm joined with one Mr. Jeffrey Benedict, as always. Jeffrey, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Doing great, Michael. Doing great.
Fantastic. And as always, we like to have a special guest to break down these matchups, Mr. Anthony Cazenza from Cincy Jungle. I hope I said that right. Anthony, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing all right. I feel, like I said before we took the air, I feel bad that I kept you guys waiting around. Kind of a busy night here, but I apologize for that. But I'm really glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
No, our pleasure. We like really knowing what's going on within these matchups from the other side of the field. So we do know the last time the Steelers and Bengals played, the last couple actually here, the Bengals have taken care of business on a 2-game winning streak. Is that trend going to continue? Do you feel like is this a winning streak to be built on?
I here's some great analysis. I don't know. I feel like there is the potential for that to happen. I feel like, you know, Cincinnati has built a really good roster, you know, from top to bottom. There are some glaring issues. It's not a perfect team. It's not a perfect roster by any means, but I mean, I feel like this is the best team they've had for quite some time, definitely since 2015. They've got a lot of excitement on this team. The Steelers, kind of like really with the entire AFC North and the entire conference, it's a lot of Jekyll and Hyde. So it's kind of like, what are you going to get from week to week from all these teams, right? I mean, Cincinnati can beat Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh by a couple touchdowns. They can beat Baltimore by multiple touchdowns in Baltimore, and then they can lose to the Jets and get stomped at home by Cleveland, right? Pittsburgh, I mean, they've gained a lot of life after not, you know, a lot of people had low expectations for them early this season, and here they are in the thick of the playoff race, but they also tied with the Lions, and, you know, now they've lost to the Chargers. So it's just so many ups and downs for all of these teams. I mean, I wish I could say, oh, you know, there's a clear cut favorite in this game. In our podcast, my co-host and I kind of agree. This is kind of a coin flip game, it feels like, despite what happened earlier this year.
Yeah, with the Bengals, that win against the Ravens, the Bengals were on a fantastic streak. And you kind of get this sense at that point when they just absolutely stomped the Ravens a good one, everyone's looking at the Bengals saying, like, whoa, like we knew they were going to be a real team, not like the same old Bengals. And you know, they could push for a playoff spot, but all of a sudden everyone's like, holy crap, is this team like a real contender? And then they go out and lose, as you said, lose to the Jets, mm-hmm. get beat solidly by the Browns before bouncing back and beating the Raiders. What happened? Is this was it like just a hot streak? Were there some injuries? Does any of it make sense to you as what happened?
yes and no. There is a culmination of factors. I think for the Jets game, that was the last in three straight road games. It was the game right after the Ravens game, which we know the Bengals just, you know, really played very well in that game. But, you know, road game, right after the Ravens game, potential trap game. The Bengals didn't play that great in that game, but they also had some critical calls that went against them in that game, particularly at the very end when the Bengals seemingly had a defensive stop and then there was a personal foul. I'm never the guy that says the refs dictated the overall result, but, you know, there were a couple of calls there that really they had an impact on that game. Regardless, the Bengals didn't play well enough to win for the most part in that one. And then, you know, against Cleveland, for whatever reason, the Cincinnati Bengals make Baker Mayfield his best career games always come against the Cincinnati Bengals. And they have no answers against the run. Somehow the Bengals, they're top five. They're ranked fifth overall in terms of rushing yards allowed this year. Yet against the Cleveland Browns, they had no answers for Nick Chubb, no answers for that offensive line, and they got stomped at home. I think this bye week came at the perfect time. I think they were feeling some fatigue, both from the three-game road trip, got beat up by the Browns, like I mentioned. And so physically, emotionally, mentally, they just needed that break right at the midway point. The defense came out and played a lot better against the Raiders. The offense kind of was up and down against the Raiders this past week. But overall, a pretty solid team win. Not pretty, not you know, super impressive, but again, you go on the road coming out of the bye, you play a team that is also in the playoff hunt and come out with a win there. You got to feel pretty good about things, but look, they just weren't doing the things well in that two-game skid that they were doing well at the early part of the season. You know, Ja'Marr Chase has fallen off a little bit statistically over the past handful of games. The defense wasn't doing the basics of tackling, creating turnovers, any of that kind of stuff. And so it came back to bite them. It came back to bite them in that Jets game and then that Browns game. But they righted some of those wrongs coming out of the bye, it would seem.
So one of the biggest storylines for both the Bengals and Steelers offense this year is how well some first-round rookies have played for either team. Now, Ja'Marr Chase specifically, he got off to an extremely hot start, but his numbers have kind of tapered off a little bit the last couple weeks. Is that more him hitting a rookie wall or teams just doubling him more or just shifting their better corners towards him? What are we kind of seeing with that slight production drop-off?
There's a myriad of factors. I think Chase himself has dropped a couple of balls that they would be tough catches, but I mean, he's had both of his hands on them. So, I mean, you go back to the Cleveland game, there were two that could have been touchdowns on deep passes that went through his hands, had a dropped touchdown early in the Jets game. If you remember how that sequence went against the Jets, the Bengals ended up getting a turnover, an interception, and returning it all the way to the 1 yard line, and somehow to the Jets 1 yard line, and somehow they got 0 points out of that. Well, part of the reason was Ja'Marr Chase dropped an easy touchdown in the end zone in that series, and so yeah, there's a couple of plays like that, but then he gives you so much on this big play, the spectacular catches, that sort of thing. He has gotten in the end zone in this three game kind of dry spell. He had a touchdown later against the Jets, and he had one this week against the Raiders. So he's getting in the end zone still, but he's had some drops. There hasn't been as big of production out of T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd as either complementary or, you know, supplemental receivers. I really thought this was going to be a breakout T. Higgins year, and it turns out it's a breakout Ja'Marr Chase year. Higgins has had some inconsistencies. Boyd hasn't always been a focal point in the offensive game plan, but they used that three-headed monster kind of early in the season, and that's why they were successful, not doing as much these past three games here. So, I mean, it's a myriad of factors. And then you've got Burrow kind of forcing the ball here and there to Chase, and it's a lot of times in tight windows or times when it's not always there. And sometimes that turns into a tip and an interception. So just a myriad of factors. I think it'll kind of right the ship as the year goes on. I just don't think we will see, because the explosive plays and the amount of yards and touchdowns that Chase was getting in the beginning of the year, it's, I mean, if he was able to sustain that over 17 games, I mean, that would be incredible. It just really wasn't truly sustainable. So I think we've had a little bit of a comeback down to reality, but I do think, you know, things will kind of spike back up, maybe not where they were early in the season, but they'll spike back up.
Now the Bengals last, I'm thinking about quite a ways. They seem to have a streak of really good tight ends, like not like top of the league tight ends, but just very solid tight end play. And they usually show up pretty big against the Steelers in some big moments. Tell us about the Bengals tight end situation this year.
Well, the main guy is CJ Uzomah. He's had a pretty good year. He's been kind of either feast or famine, though, in terms of his overall production this year. He's had like the Ravens game. He had like 90 yards and two touchdowns. And then the Jaguars game, he basically was one of the biggest reasons they ended up coming back and winning that game on Thursday night. So, I mean, there are a couple of games. He's second on the team in touchdown catches with five. A little bit quiet again in this lull that the Bengals have had. I mean, this 1-2 record in these past three games, I guess. So he's been a little quiet, talented guy, athletic guy, and has become a team leader. So he's kind of your top guy. Drew Sample is another guy. He's been a little more active in the passing game, but overall he's more utilized as a blocker. They sometimes line him up as an H-back, fullback type of guy. He'll be more active in the run game in terms of blocking and whatnot. And really behind them, that's just kind of, you know, you've got Mitchell Wilcox. He was out last week, you know, an undrafted guy from 2020. So really, I mean, the main threat there would be CJ Uzomah and his size. And if the Bengals are able to properly utilize play action, if they get the type of protection that they like, Joe Burrow has hit some critical passes to CJ Uzomah in some of these games. I remember back in week one, in overtime against the Vikings to set up the game-winning field goal on a fourth and one. It was a play action rollout, and he hit Uzama in a play that I think the Vikings were 99% certain the Bengals were going to run the football, and they ran this play. So, Uzama is pretty much the big guy at tight end to look out for.
So the Bengals offensive line a year ago is one of those units. They're kind of cursed with a little bit of injury and then just some not the most talented players, I'd say, ranging across that line. But it was one of the things that kind of the Bengals really focused on this offseason, got healthy. And really that first matchup looked pretty good against the Steelers defensive front without TJ Watt. Of course, he may be out again this week. Still don't know his status. But has the Bengals offensive line continued to trend upward like we saw in that first matchup?
There are weaknesses to exploit. There are it's an imperfect unit, but they are more stable than they have been over the past couple of years. And one of the things I pointed out in our show earlier was the fact, they're still giving up hits, they're still giving up sacks, and there's still some consistency issues on a drive-to-drive basis in terms of sustaining good run blocking, sustaining good pass blocking. It's better. It's better than it has been, but it's not great. But one of the areas in which they have seemingly improved is in penalties. And so in years past, not only would you have a drive where you'd give up a sack and then you'd have a holding penalty or a false start penalty in the same drive, completely just obliterates any kind of progress you were going to make in that drive, right? So this year they'd have a negative play, not always a sack, maybe a negative run, but they're not compounding those issues with penalties. And so then they can dig themselves out of a hole and maybe get into a more third and manageable instead of always a third and 12, a third and 14, what have you, third and eight. Maybe you're more in the third and fours, third and ones, that sort of thing. So it's a quiet type of improvement in terms of penalties, but it's a big one. And so I think it goes hand in hand with the Bengals bringing in a new offensive line coach this year, Frank Pollock. They also gave him the title designation of run game coordinator. So, I think right now their best offensive lineman is actually their left guard, Quentin Spain. If you look at PFF metrics and whatnot, he's been their most solid guy. You've got some good play from the tackles in Jonah Williams and Riley Reiff, but they've also had issues against some of the premier rushers. Jonah Williams had some issues against, Ngakoue last week against the Raiders. Miles Garrett has gotten in the backfield. So it's better. It's better than it has been, but it's still a work in progress. I still think, they need to add some talent next year, whether that's right in the first round, high-end free agency talent, what have you. They still are a piece or two away from being a pretty good offensive line.
This season, Joe Mixon, if I looked at it correctly, he's already set a career high for touchdowns in a season. Mm-hmm. Is this his best year he's played yet? His second year in the league was a really, really good season. Is he doing better? Would you rate this so far as being better than that, or is he kind of a product of this offense right now?
I would say this is the best I've probably seen him play. And last week, if you go back to last week, 120-ish yards, 4 yards a carry, 2 touchdowns, very workmanlike, right? I mean, just a grind out type of performance. The passing game was not working well for the Bengals last week. And so they said, we want to run the ball with Joe Mixon this week. That's what we're doing. That's the game plan. That's what we're doing. We're going to try and find offensive balance. And he responded, and he bounced back from a number of negative runs wherein the blocking wasn't there, but then there were other times where the blocking was there and he would pop off 15 yard gains, 20 yard gains and make the Raiders pay. So he's a guy that can really kind of do a lot of different things. I mean, he's a hard runner. He's absolutely massive. He's built like a, what house. And he runs tough. He's got some decent speed for his size. Can do some things as a receiver. He's had a fair share of receiving yards and touchdowns this year. And then he's improving as a blocker. So he's really trying to be a 3-down player. I would say this is probably the best we've seen him play, but it's also a lot of things we have seen from him in terms of tough runs and whatnot in years past. I think it coincides with the best offensive line he has had in a few years. The Frank Pollock coming back as the offensive line coach, a guy who he thrived under a few years ago when he was here last time. And, you know, just I think things just clicking a bit more on offense in general. So, yeah, I mean, it's not by a huge stretch the best he has played, but I would say it's probably the best we've seen. He's also healthier right now. You know, in years past, there was always a game or two where he would either miss or, you know, maybe even extended periods of time. But yeah, I think he's playing some of his best football right now.
So former Pittsburgh Steelers corner Mike Hilton, when he made the jump over to Cincinnati, we learned he kind of brought some of the things the Steelers secondary did with him, like implementing a fine system if there's a mistake in practice or whatnot, some of the other DBs may have to pay some sort of a fine. And I remember the last time we played the Bengals being told that he's been a big kind of help for the secondary as they kind of grow in their development. But at the same time, a lot of the stats are kind of coming out that he's blitzing considerably less than over the time he was with the Steelers, and he hasn't gotten a sack yet as a member of the Bengals. Does his on-field success show the amount that he's actually kind of worked with the rest of the group? Is he as talented, or is he actually putting up the numbers that you would hope from him, or would you kind of hope that the coaching staff might use him a little bit differently?
I would argue that Mike Hilton was my personal favorite offseason addition and by the Bengals at the time. And I think that I thought that way because, number one, he had a lot of respect around the league as a slot corner and just a physical guy, obviously taking a quality player away from a division rival. All of that kind of plays into a thing where you go, hey, that's a pretty savvy move by the Bengals, right? I would say the stats are not there at this point in terms of big plays and whatnot. He had a very nice play last week at a critical stop. The Bengals had fumbled the ball away on their first series, gave the Raiders great field position, and you thought they were going to obviously make that into a touchdown, and the Bengals defense held strong, and it was in part by a nice tackle for loss by Mike Hilton. So, you know, he's had a couple of nice moments there. He hasn't had the huge plays like the sacks and things like that, but I think it's kind of also a more locker room effect. And I go back to when the Bengals grabbed James Harrison a little bit. Now, James Harrison at that point in time was towards the end of his career. Of course, when he came back to the Steelers, he was like incredible for another year or two, but, you know, the Bengals didn't use him to his respective strengths always as a pass rusher when they had him on defense, but he was like a locker room guy. He was a guy that just kind of brought that nastiness, brought that attitude from Pittsburgh, and it, you know, kind of seeped through the locker room. And I think Mike Hilton, with the coming from a traditionally winning team and bringing that winning mentality, bringing that swagger, and bringing all of the things that he brings, while the stats may not show it on the, you know, on the stat sheet and whatnot, he's had an impact on this defense. And I think he is just one of a lot of different parts. Jadobia Awuzie, the other corner, who's a boundary corner, he's been a nice pickup in free agency by the Bengals. You know, they brought in a couple of interior defensive linemen, Larry Ogunjobi from the Browns, BJ Hill from the Giants. Those guys have been, big impact kind of guys. DJ Reader's healthy as a nose tackle. He's been excellent. So it's kind of a combination of a lot of factors where you're seeing this defensive improvement. Hilton has been a part of it, even though the stats don't show it. Still waiting for some of those high impact plays, interceptions, sacks, that sort of thing to kind of come here. But yeah, his impact's been felt.
Jesse Bates, obviously, should be well known by anyone, especially inside the AFC North. But how is he doing? How's his season been? And lastly, is he the best free safety in the AFC North?
Well, you're really trying to pin me to a wall there a little bit.
Classic.
Look, it hasn't been the normal season for Jesse Bates in terms of amounts of turnovers and whatnot. He's always kind of that three interception guy, a couple of big plays. Last year, he was outstanding. And I think a lot of people thought that he should and would get a contract extension by the Bengals, and it didn't happen. I think there was maybe an offer out there, but they seem to be pretty far apart right now. It would seem he's probably a franchise tag guy next year as his contract expires. He hasn't played as well this year. He has admitted that. The Pro Football Focus scores indicate that. He had the one big interception against the Jets. That's kind of been his biggest play. He had a couple of nice plays last week against the Raiders in run support and against screen passes and whatnot. So he had a couple of nice plays there. Again, a guy that just hasn't had those high impact game changing plays as frequently yet this year. He admitted that maybe the contract thing was in his head, maybe, you know, just a little bit of different responsibilities because of the personnel that they've added on the defensive side of the ball the past couple of off seasons. So a little bit of a role change potentially, but he's also, if you go back and look at some of his stats, I feel like he's always been kind of a tale of two seasons within a season guy. Like he plays a certain way, either bad or very good one half of the season. And then kind of reverts back or leaps forward the second half of the season. So I think the hope is that maybe he's played at average, maybe close to above average this first half of the season. And now he kind of hits his stride, admits that he's had his mind elsewhere, or maybe some other factors are at play, and really starts to kind of hit his stride as the playoffs are looming here. But yeah, as far as, you know, I think if you would have asked me last year, is Jesse Bates the best free safety in the division? I would have said, yes, it's close. I think it's pretty neck and neck based on kind of what we've seen right now from Bates. Both guys are excellent. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Both guys are excellent. But I think, again, if he picks up things the second half of this season here, we may have another conversation about it. And I don't know. But I think, I mean, you can't really go wrong with either guy. They're both really good. Is that diplomatic enough? That was diplomatic, right?
That was a great answer, right down the middle. Love it. That was perfect. But to now scout your own defense here, where should the Steelers attack with the football? Where can the Steelers find success when they're on offense?
Well, before last week, I would have said Eli Apple. He is stepping in as a starting corner. As you guys probably remember, he was a first round draft pick by the Giants and has largely been a disappointment throughout his NFL career. Came to the Bengals, had a connection with Lou Anarumo from his time with the Giants. Was kind of slated as a number four, number five guy coming as a corner on this team. And then with Trey Waynes out, he was the guy who had to step in and start. So Awuzie is playing very well on the other boundary. Eli Apple has had some ups and downs. He had an excellent game last week, had an interception, was about 90 overall PFF grade, just was basically lockdown type of guy last week. I don't know that he's going to sustain that from week to week, but he is getting more comfortable with more playing time and with the coach he's familiar with and all that kind of stuff. So I would have immediately pointed you that way. But I don't know that he can play like that on a game to game basis. I still think that's a guy that Ben should look at. You know, Logan Wilson had a great, great first five, six games for the Bengals this year. He has fallen off a little bit from a production standpoint, big play standpoint. I don't want to say you go after him, but that's just something to kind of monitor. You guys probably remember in the first game, he had those two interceptions and just was seemingly everywhere in that game. Haven't really seen the same type of play since basically the Ravens game out of Logan Wilson. So those are kind of some of the areas that I think you want to look at. The Bengals are also missing Akeem Davis Gaither. He's on IR. He's a guy who's a really athletic linebacker, a guy they used in pass coverage here and there. In different sub packages, that may be an area in which they want to exploit. And for some reason, especially against the Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger just needs to hit a tight end. The Bengals always have trouble covering a tight end, especially a pretty good one. Freiermuth's looking like the next in line of the next great Steelers tight end. I said when they drafted him, like, watch, the chance going to be Muth, right? And so, because I remember Heath, right? Heath, and I'm like, watch, it'll be Muth. And of course, that's what's happened. But he looks like a really good player. I would expect that, especially if Ben wants to get in a groove, that's a guy he should look to.
Now, the Bengals have had a lot of turnover in their defense, as we've talked about throughout this, bringing in different people. And yet, that defense is pretty much a top 10 defense this season. If you look at their you know, points per drive given up and their yardage and their different per play stats, they're a top 10 unit. Do you credit that to the assembling of the parts together? Was that the design of who they brought in to fill different roles? Would you credit that more to the defensive coordinator in the scheme, or is this is this just an overhaul of talent that came in and is driving this?
I think it's the culmination of a couple of different off seasons of free agency acquisitions wherein they heavily focused on the defensive side of the ball. I mentioned DJ Reader, a guy they brought in 2020 in free agency, paid him handsomely, unfortunately missed most of last year, but is playing excellent this year. I mean, at nose tackle though, he's only, you know, getting about 50-60% of the snaps depending, you know, he's rotated out of there, but he's playing really well. Larry Ogunjobi's kind of a, you know, he's a feast or famine type of guy in terms of he'll have a couple of huge plays, but then he'll also be out of position to let up a huge play type of thing. But he overall has been a good acquisition. BJ Hill, I mentioned his name earlier on the interior. He's been a good acquisition. Hilton Wouzier. So I think it's a culmination of the acquisitions that they've made. I think it also just, they're just a lot healthier this year. Last year, they were grabbing guys off the street, you know, street free agents that were coming in and starting. I mean, these are guys that were out of football and they're coming in and starting games for them and that sort of thing. So yeah, they're just way, way healthier this year, knock on wood. And I think that's a big thing. And then everybody's getting more comfortable. It's Anarumo's third year as the Bengals defensive coordinator. He kind of has quote unquote, his guys. Like I said, they're healthier and they're just understanding the system a bit more. So, you know, I think it's just a group that's kind of playing a little bit more in unison and is healthier than in years past.
With how the Steelers' schedule has been shaping up, one of the things I've been talking about on social media and on other podcasts is that they are desperate to win these next two divisional games that the Steelers have in front of them, especially with how hard things kind of start to become for them after these next two matchups. But can the Bengals survive a divisional loss and still be in the thick of the playoffs and in the thick of the AFC North race? Or are they in a situation where they need to start stacking some divisional wins if they want to be division champions or to just flat out make the playoffs?
They can, and they can because they're 2-1 in the division right now. I think ideally, if the Bengals are going to be taken seriously, I said going into last week, every single one of the eight games remaining when the Raiders were on the schedule, they play teams that are either currently slated to make the playoffs or right outside the playoffs, looking right in and trying to shuffle back in. So they play a lot of teams right in the thick of things, including the Steelers. So, and three division games remaining. So they can afford to lose this game. If this is the one that you're referencing or a division game, but that would mean they probably need to sweep the Ravens and get the win against the Browns, or they need to sweep the Steelers and then get a win against the Ravens or the Browns. What, you know, whatever the case may be, I think they need at least four division wins in order to get, and really for this division to kind of start sorting itself out. It's just a kind of cannibalizing each other, right? It's just like they win, they lose, they win, they lose, and they're just treading water, it seems. So can they afford it at 6-4? Yeah. Wouldn't be ideal, and they really need to make up ground afterward. But this is one, I think, especially at home. You already took care of business on the road with Pittsburgh. I think you gotta be able to lock this one up if you're gonna really make a strong push for the playoffs.
So as we approach the halfway point of our show here, Jeffrey, do you have any final questions you want to get off?
No, I'm good.
Okay, so we have a couple closing questions for you here, Anthony. First and foremost, to put you completely on the spot, who's going to win on Sunday and what's the final score?
I said this, I think, maybe before we took the air here. I mean, flip a coin on this one for me. I don't think we're going to see the same result that we saw a couple of weeks ago. And I know there's been a rivalry, and I know the Steelers don't even really look at the Bengals necessarily sometimes as rivals, but I always, from the Bengals side of things, I always marvel at what Mike Tomlin has done and how the Steelers organization is run and all kinds of different things. I know there's some bad blood here and there, but I mean, I always marvel at it. And why I say that is because, again, the expectations weren't very high for the Steelers from a lot of different standpoints going into this year. And here they are right in the thick of things again. And even in these games, you think they're dead. You think they're dead against the Chargers. And here they get, I mean, they come back and they get this incredible lead. It's just, you know, they just never die. So, I did pick the Bengals maybe by a couple of points, maybe by the spread, which I think is at about 3.5 points right now. But that tells you, because it's at in Cincinnati and the Bengals are favored by 3.5 points. I mean, it's basically a overall, it would have been a pick 'em, right? I mean, so I guess maybe just because of the home field advantage, Bengals take, I would say the Bengals take care of business, but it would not surprise me at all if the Steelers end up winning this game.
Yeah, good stuff. Now, the last thing for you, if there's anything you want to plug for the people.
Sure. I'm on Twitter at CJ Anthony CUI. And I write for Cincy Jungle. It's the counterpart here to Behind the Steel Curtain in the SB Nation Network. Podcast is the Orange and Black Insider. So check it out. And I appreciate you guys having me on. I apologize for being late and holding up the show here, but appreciate you having me on.
Oh, no, it was our pleasure. Thanks for coming on, Anthony. And good luck on Sunday.
Yeah, back at you. Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Happy Thanksgiving. Now, for all your Steelers fans still tuning in here, we are going to get into our break and jump into the Steelers side of things. So if you're watching on YouTube and Facebook, don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment. If you're listening on the podcast side, you're going to want to go over and click to part two now.